se le calumnia y se le ataca con la participación de otros estados. Y lo que sí es profundamente inaceptable es que un evento organizado con toda premeditación y de manera oculta contra Cuba, con violación de todos los procedimientos, se niegue el uso de la palabra.
Activistas en Estados Unidos protestan contra la brutalidad policial. Alfredo Miranda reporta.
Al grito de "la vida de los negros importa", cientos de personas marcharon por las calles de Washington durante el Día Nacional de Protesta contra la Brutalidad Policíaca.
Estamos aquí para conmemorar el Día Nacional de Protesta contra la Brutalidad Policíaca. Mucha gente no lo sabe, pero Washington tiene una terrible situación de brutalidad policíaca y queremos resaltar ese problema y combatirlo.
El problema de la brutalidad policíaca es un mal endémico que azota a todo el país. Casos emblemáticos que en el pasado provocaron la indignación colectiva aún no han sido resueltos, por el contrario, se han multiplicado. Han habido 3 asesinatos a manos de la policía en Washington este verano. Vemos más golpizas, aumento de detención y cacheo y otras políticas racistas. Queremos recordar a los que fueron asesinados, queremos dar testimonio de las injusticias y comprometernos a la lucha sobre estos temas. Según activistas, la desproporcionada presencia policial en barrios afroamericanos en las grandes ciudades del país demuestra que existe un afán de control gubernamental sobre la clase oprimida. Sentimos que la policía pretende ser una solución militar a los males sociales dentro de las comunidades oprimidas. La policía hace el juramento de proteger y servir, pero sirven al interés de la clase dominante y lo que protegen es su propiedad. El activismo asegura que no se producirán cambios en las prácticas policiales estadounidenses mientras esa institución continúe ejerciendo el rol de protección de privilegios raciales y corporativos.
La policía se creó en este país como cazadores de esclavos, como gente que atrapaba a los negros que escapaban de las plantaciones. Nada se ha hecho para reparar eso. Se necesita desmantelar lo que actualmente existe e implementar el concepto de seguridad comunitaria centrada en la práctica de la justicia.
Los manifestantes marcharon al edificio del recientemente inaugurado Museo Policial, al que critican por no abordar el problema de la brutalidad.
Temas como la brutalidad policíaca han sido eliminados o están en proceso como si ya no existiera. Claro, hablan de la persecución de esclavos y la brutalidad policíaca contra los movimientos de derechos civiles de los años 60, pero no del presente. Realmente eso es vergonzoso.
Desde Washington, Alfredo Miranda, Hispan TV.
En otras noticias, altos oficiales de Rusia y Estados Unidos ahondaron la discusión sobre el posible retiro de Washington del Tratado de Armas Estratégicas de Alcance Medio. Ariana Nieves viene con los detalles.
Cara a cara entre el presidente de Rusia, Vladimir Putin, y el asesor del presidente de Estados Unidos para la Seguridad Nacional, John Bolton. Una cita que ha estado centrada en la retirada de Estados Unidos del Tratado de Fuerzas Nucleares de Alcance Mediano y Corto. Una salida, una retirada que el presidente ruso ha calificado de unilateral, no obstante, ha elogiado y calificado de muy positivo el intercambio directo entre la Casa Blanca y el Kremlin. Al inicio de este encuentro hubo un curioso debate sobre la simbología del escudo de los Estados Unidos.
No sé qué puño.
Según recuerdo, en el escudo de Estados Unidos aparece un águila. A un lado tiene 13 flechas y al otro una dama con 13 olivas como símbolo de la política de paz. La pregunta es, ¿acaso su águila ya ha picoteado todas las olivas y quedan solo las flechas?
Espero tener algunas respuestas para usted, pero no he traído más olivas.
Es lo que había pensado.
Vladimir Putin ha trasladado su intención de encontrarse con su homólogo estadounidense Donald Trump el próximo 11 de noviembre en París con motivo del centenario del final de la Primera Guerra Mundial. Una invitación, una iniciativa que John Bolton ha confirmado y que ha dicho que trasladaría al presidente estadounidense y que estaría encantado de corresponder a este encuentro. Recordemos que el alto mando estadounidense se encuentra de visita aquí en Rusia, ha sostenido encuentros con otros funcionarios del gobierno ruso, precisamente horas después de que el propio presidente de Estados Unidos, Donald Trump, confirmara lo que ya había anunciado, la salida, la retirada de su país de este acuerdo.
Y que concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTI, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Instancia de y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Toshi y de Norma Martínez, se despide su amigo de siempre, Fernando Velasco. Gracias por acompañarnos. Los gobiernos de México y Centroamérica continúan criminalizando a los integrantes de la caravana migrante. Fuerzas policiales reprimen a manifestantes frente al Congreso argentino durante el debate del presupuesto 2019, que incluye ajustes ordenados por el Fondo Monetario Internacional. Activistas en Estados Unidos protestan contra la brutalidad policial. El Servicio Secreto de la Unión Americana informa haber interceptado paquetes explosivos dirigidos a los expresidentes William Bill Clinton y Barack Obama. A continuación, detalles de estas y otras noticias en esta edición del Informativo Pacífico. Te saluda Fernando Velázquez. Quédate con nosotros.
Today is October 25th, 2018. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz you're listening to, or at least an archive of it. I'm Robert Norris, and coming up today, it's Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides yet again. We're going to be looking at the campground closed down and protests that may be in the planning. Other stuff, too, so don't go away.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So the recent controversy, at least that we've been following here on this show, has been both the winter shelter hoax that's being promulgated as a solution or a Band-Aid interim situation or a path toward shelter or whatever you will by the Santa Cruz City Council and its staff subordinates, Susie O'Hara, Tina Scholl, and of course City Manager Martine Bernal, who really rules the roost on these issues. The point has been, and that I think we pointed out here, or I have, and various speakers who appeared on here, that there is no significant winter shelter this winter. And in a way, that's nothing new, because every winter, where there has been at least more winter shelter, though not much more, it's been token winter shelter. You know, 110 beds for potentially, 1,000 to 2,000 homeless. And the city always says, city officials will tell you, oh, well, nobody goes to fills up the shelter anyway, which can be attributed to a number of things or accounted for by a number of things. The critics of the homeless will say, oh, they just want to do their drugs and can't follow the rules. You know, that whereas those, if you ask on the street, will say it's a concentration camp. You're likely to get sick there. You have to be in by a certain time, which prohibits you from, for example, trying to do any kind of work or meet schedules and so forth that you have to do in order to get what you need in terms of food and other essentials out there. Or the conditions are wretched. In other ways, you're treated in a dehumanized fashion, however much people try to be nice. It's a warehousing situation. You have to get up at 4 or 5 in the morning. which can be difficult for people who are disabled, ill, sick. I'm repeating myself, but and is simply not just an inviting option for many. It is an unacceptable option given the kind of what's presented. But some people do use it, particularly those who are really not just desperate, but have the mobility to get to it and so forth. You're in many cases, in some of these shelter situations in the past winter, you weren't allowed to walk to it or to get to it yourself. You had to be there at a particular pickup point at a particular time, often in the late afternoon, as I said before. So, and there were other restrictions, like you couldn't take your stuff in, you couldn't drive to it if you had a vehicle, you couldn't be with your partner, although that there's been some, I think, some changes to that in the last few years. If you had a pet or support animal, that would be a difficulty. You got searched as though you were a criminal on entering the shelter. And you were treated either like a child or a criminal in some respects, which doesn't go over too good with mature people who are struggling to survive anyway. But at least in past years, there's been the shadow of shelter. This year, they instead set up programs, added some beds to programs that weren't shelters, that were in essence so-called pathway to housing programs, such as the Pauley Loft, such as the River Street Campground, such as the now abandoned car park, which actually might have actually been in its way a shelter. But they just completely fled that program because of the unspecified and unreally documented complaints from neighbors, or the usual NIMBY yowls of protest that the poor are entering their neighborhood, the criminals are coming, that sort of thing. So Jessica York, in her usual fashion, covered this in a story. Actually, it came out. Well, it was published in today's paper. It came out yesterday, covering the City Council's Tuesday oral communications period, where there was a protest, a demonstration outside by those who resented this idea of this winter shelter hoax situation, and also the closing of the River Street Campground, which, even though it is a campground that was in, you know, behind barbed wire and serving only a smaller number than winter shelter had in the past throughout the summer, it was an example of the city's breaking its commitments. The city, which set up something that in some ways was better than anything they'd done before, on a very small scale. You could have your store, your stuff there. You could be there during the day. There were meals available. There was access to internet, I believe. You could charge your devices if you had to. You weren't allowed visitors, so that was an example of treating people in a prison-like way. And you weren't allowed to leave or come and go except through a set of chartered buses that came and went, or shuttles. And that meant you had to accommodate yourself to that and just not be a normal human being who can come and go from where they are staying without hindrance. But still, it had some really serious advantages. That was promised to go on through April. That was the promises of Susie O'Hara and Tina Scholl of the city manager's office in August at City Council. Without giving any really clear or plausible explanations why, that was just abruptly abandoned. People instead were told that, well, on, it's a little unclear, November 15th or November 30th or maybe November 1st, you're all going to be told to leave, and some of you will be able to get into the winter shelter program, which is a nighttime only program, which is a no, don't bring your stuff along type program, or bring very little of it, which is a don't walk up to it program, similar to what the River Street Campground was, for 60 people at most, which in essence would mean there's really no winter shelter for anybody other than the 60 people in the River Street Campground if all of them went to that program. But then again, they're only going to be allowed I think, immediate access to it, preferential access for the first week or two. At least I'm getting unclear stories from Tina Scholl and Susie O'Hara. They haven't written me back, of course. Susie O'Hara was written 2 months ago asking for details about this, and she said, we're working on it, and then never got back to me about anything they were working on, just sort of dropping this bombshell on people. So in response, folks did a protest outside City Hall. Food Not Bomb set up tables. Joe Schultz's India Joe's provided some chicken soup, alarming all the vegetarians. And there were a number of speakers who came to City Council. I was one of them. So was Keith McHenry of Food Not Bomb. So was Phil Posner of the Depot Project. And there were a couple of homeless people from the actual River Street campground, which is saying something, because though the campground people were very upset by this situation, they still seem, and I'm afraid they are, I hope I'm wrong, they've been domesticated by this whole business of thinking that they can rely on the city to protect them and defend their survival situation and their rights if only they behave like good little people and good little subservient folks and do what they're told and all will be well and follow the rules. No, unfortunately, that's just not how it goes. The city tends to respond to pressures from the harsher, colder, crueler forces. And it's not about money, really, because you've got large amounts of money reportedly coming in. Let's take a look at what Jessica York had to write about this. Jessica writes, community members bombarded the Santa Cruz City Council on Tuesday with demands to address what one speaker called the war on the homelessness. Actually, it was the war on the homeless. If it were a war on homelessness, that would be pretty good. But of course, as usual, Jessica is not too careful with her language, or actually, I'm not sure if she deliberately slants it. With winter shelter options reduced from past years, the pending shuttering of a city-run homeless encampment, and closure of city parks for maintenance. And that, of course, was the other issue, the issue of the fencing of San Lorenzo, the fencing of the post office, and the previous fencing of the Laurel Loudon Nelson, London Nelson Park area, and of Garfield Park, Star of the Sea Park. These wrought iron fences around parks, as well as, of course, the fencing around the homeless lack of services center on Coral Street and the meshing around the sidewalk areas outside, are all part of this growing kind of prisonization process that's looking pretty bad to those of us who who aren't held captive by it, and I would imagine even worse by those who are. I suppose... I have heard at points that some people have said they felt glad they were protected from the drug dealers at the homeless lack of services center. I haven't heard that recently, but that was a claim that was made years ago. But I don't think that actually, I don't know. I don't think it was the majority sentiment. I didn't hear it from many people. I heard it from a few. A permanent steel fence, Jessica York's story continues, is being installed around the downtown Santa Cruz post office, replacing the temporary chain link fence. It has the impression to most people living on the streets that there's a war by this organization, by the city manager's office, by city council, by Parks and Rec, against people who are poor, said homelessness issues activist and Food Not Bomb's co-founder Keith McHenry. As a result of the policies here, we know more people will die this year on the streets as a direct result of the actions of the city of Santa Cruz. And I think that's all the... she may give one more quote to McHenry. Then she provides an amplification process for city manager Martine Bernal. And she writes, on Wednesday, City Manager Martine Bernal told the Sentinel that allegations were untrue, that the closures of the homeless camp in San Lorenzo and Grant Street parks were purposefully timed. He said maintenance of the Grant Street Park, including repairs to the on-site restroom, would likely be completed before the camp's phased closure begins on November 16th. San Lorenzo Park, site of a four-month unauthorized homeless encampment that began in October 2017, that was last year and last winter when they're actually... was, I wouldn't call it a decent campground, but it was at least a place where people could come and go. They had access to porta-potties and washing stations and trash pickups, the most obvious things that the city has refused to do week after week, month after month, and, of course, in the past, year after year. San Lorenzo Park will be reopened as portions in portions as a park and facility improvements are made and may last throughout November, Bernal said. That's the fencing off of San Lorenzo Park. And, of course, the driving away of homeless people. And what Keith McHenry noted, if you read his Facebook page, is that when he went down there and observed what the Parks and Rec staff were doing, they weren't just fencing things off. They were telling homeless people they could not be on the paths there. They had to move across the river to the other side. It seemed to him this was clearly an anti-homeless move. And that was what he reported to me. There might be a little bit of an overlap, Bernal continued, with respect to San Lorenzo Park, but if that were the case, we would have maybe done the work later or kept it closed later, Bernal said, if there was an attempt to do a sort of direct link there. So the answer is no. Well, even if there's no direct link, I would comment, it is clear it has a direct impact on people, and it is clearly an attempt to stop, or it is it combined with the Parks and Recs driving people away from that area is an attempt to make sure that what happened last year when people, even before Police Chief Andy Mills and then Parks and Rec boss Mauro Garcia agreed to allow people to be in the park at night with tents, with sleeping bags, with blankets, in the middle of a hepatitis A threatened epidemic, because that was better than shutting down the restrooms as was being done now throughout the town still. The Loudoun Nelson bathrooms, for all of you following that disgraceful situation, are still locked to the general public unless you can prove you are a member of a program that they are doing. So this driving away homeless people from the area is also a way of making sure that the San Lorenzo campground doesn't reestablish itself, which is really what was happening even before it was sort of tolerated, or police officers were actually directing people to go to San Lorenzo Park, which of course caused conniption fits from some of our right-wing buddies who just can't stand the idea of poor people having a tent to sleep in at night outside unless it's made as uncomfortable as possible and is only provided for the very, very few. Because, you know, this is going to draw thousands and thousands of homeless from all over the world to come to Santa Cruz because of its kind community and fine climate. At least one of those is true. At the behest of community member lobbying, Jessica York's story continues, San Lorenzo Park's bathroom was reopened this summer after an extended closure not long after the city closed its Loudoun Nelson Community Center bathrooms to community members not engaged in center programming, Bernal said. Actually, of course, that's a nice, genteel way of, by community center lobbying, we're talking about loud, angry protests in front of Carol Skurich's, she was the interim head of Parks and Rec once Mauro Garcia left. And the new head is a guy called Tony Elliott that members of Conscience and Action are planning to talk to, but I haven't heard anything come out of that yet. I've never met the guy. And frankly, I'm not terribly hopeful, because you don't need to really provide Elliot with new information to get the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms open. You need to simply document the fact that there was never any particularly excessive vandalism. That if they want to deal with the problem with drug problems, then you need to do things like really take real solutions or attempt to do so, such as safe injection centers, such as, you know, even at the very least, Sharps containers, which used to be there. I keep reciting and reiterating these same obvious things to me, which show they aren't really interested in that at all, that is to say the powers that be, but rather they are concerned with pleasing reactionary drug war mentality type folks who live in the area. And that's a bad thing, I think. Bad for the human rights of poor people, bad for the consciences of the rest of us, bad for the whole community here. Heavy and improper use of the toilets were part of the impetus for repair work needed now, he said. Now, he's talking about, I guess, San Lorenzo Park or Loudoun Nelson Park. I'm not sure what specific repair work he is referring to, because when we looked at the emails for Loudoun Nelson, we found very little repair work was required. There was a couple of instances of damage, for sure. But, you know, nothing requiring massive closure of the restrooms. Other than, you know, the general statement about unlawful behavior, which supposedly meant people shooting up, or they mean homeless people clustering in Loudoun Nelson Park, which, of course, is where they went once Mills and the Parks and Rec closed San Lorenzo Park and shoehorned some of those people into the River Street campground, from which they are now being squeezed out and dropped, some of them, in the Association of Faith Communities run, I think that's the people who are running it this year, campground out on 7th Avenue, not campground, shelter out on 7th Avenue. Continuing this article by Jessica York, "This is the kind of interim period that allows us to do the maintenance before the winter storms start," Bernal said. I mean, after all, it's going to be, well, the storms may blow away, freeze, and kill the homeless, but they're also going to make it rather difficult for us to do our routine maintenance in the park area. That's my translation of what Bernal is saying and not saying. That's another rationale for the timing. It's that window of opportunity that we have given the summer use and the transition of the camp. That's what City Manager Martine Bernal, the most powerful man in the city, says. Bernal told the council, here's more about from Bernal, of course, by Jessica York, on Tuesday, that officials are continuing to seek alternative housing solutions. Aha. They're seeking alternative housing solutions. This is great rhetoric. For those 50 or more people staying at the River Street camp, particularly for its most vulnerable occupants, such as veterans, women, and families. And you hear this again and again from the city council members who are very concerned about veterans, women, and families, or at least talking about veterans, women, and families as they talk about the $30 million that's coming their way, or coming the way of the city and county. But then you also, and then you hear Jessica York talking about 50 or more people staying at the River Street camp, but no mention of the 1,000 to 2,000 people outside who aren't staying at the River Street camp and who have no place to go and who are being driven away from public spaces where they, last year at least, some of them could stay. Also during the meeting, the council updated the city's cannabis law. Not going to get into that one this time. I'm hoping actually to talk to Pat Malo, who endlessly never returns his calls. But he did run into me, give me a bit of an interview at the council. I'm going to play a little bit of that today. The issue, of course, for the people coming to the city council on Tuesday was the prohibitive taxes that are driving the businesses under, so they say. It's not, of course, the broader issues of the right to use marijuana medically and recreationally without being treated like a criminal, the right to sell it, to distribute it, without being severely taxed and herded into denied the right to advertise it, denied the right to having, you know, these intense security measures around marijuana, which are not around much more lethal drugs like tobacco, alcohol, drug stores, pharmaceuticals. Instead, you have this massive paranoia, which is still ingrained in and still running the city's policies. So anyway, she writes more about that, she has a final paragraph. But again, this is her story, timing of Santa Cruz Park homeless camp closures question. I'm going to play a little of what Martine Bernal actually said. That's the city manager at the city council. I'm not going to play all of it. It's 15 minutes long. I'm going to give you, I think, the first 5 minutes or so. And the pathetic response of the city council, Sandy Brown, one of the two so-called liberal or progressive council members, wasn't there. I don't know why. And, of course, still hasn't kept the promises that she's... even more recently affirmed she would regarding forwarding to staff information that would let us see what the staff is and isn't doing around some really key issues around police misbehavior and open government. But that's another story. Chris Crone was there and didn't make any strong statements about shelter or ask about why they're closing the River Street campground when they said they weren't going to be doing that. And you're going to hear Martine Bernal's... I call it gobbledygook or bureaucraties. It's language that obfuscates, that is very vague. It's loved by the incoming mayor, Maxine Watkins. I'm going to get her name wrong, I'm sure. I've got a screw up there, but eventually I'll get it right. She's the likely mayor in December, the person who got the most votes at the last election. And So let's first get a little music, and then I will be back.
All hail us, and heed us, and read us, and quote us, the Supreme Court Republicans of the United States. Scrote us. They brought a case before us, a ruling we upheld. A private corporation can't be legally compelled if it violates its deep religious credo to insure an employee against her wild libido. For in our esteemed opinion, a woman has the right to work for Hobby Lobby and to keep her legs shut tight. And the company, like a church, has its morality. No other church sells Elmer's glue, but that's a technicality. All hail us, and heed us, and read us, and quote us, scrote us. Now reproductive matters are private, oh yes ma'am, to be discussed between a woman's boss and Franklin Graham. And we all recall that sexism and bigotry began when Eve corrupted Adam, had him wear a fig tree. Yes, the laws of health insurance are full of ifs and buts. They're covering our penises, but not sure who's he what's. We're insuring for Viagra and vasectomy. You say, well, that's a double standard, and that sounds correct to me. The Supreme Court Republicans of the United States. John Roberts, rigid as a ramrod, a model for all constitutional students. And Samuel Alito puts the prude in jurisprudence. And Antonin Scalia, a genius, or so his bio promises. Someday his head will just explode, and so will Clarence Thomas's. And Anthony Kennedy is a swinger. We're certainly glad to have counted him in. We're not the Warren Court. We're the court that's waging war on women. A corporation is a person. Moreover, it's a man. A woman is a helpmate for to please him if she can. And a man may worship any god he pleases, just so long as his religion is approved by Jesus. All hail us, and heed us, and read us, and quote us. But Ginsburg and Breyer, Kagan and Sotomayor, booed us. They said the scrotus screwed us.
That was from Roy Zimmerman's The Faucets on Fire album, and it was called Scrotus, Santa Cruz, the Supreme Court of the Republicans of the United States. It's from a 2015 album, which some of the references I'm a little unclear on, but some of them I'm not. Special points for those who can clarify what the first few references are, because I'm a little unclear, but this, some of them about the deference of the Supreme Court to men's medical situation as distinguished from women's is, I understand it. I don't know if I can recall exactly this particular decision where that became an issue, but I'll play the song anyway, and I did play it, so there. So back to the City Council's Tuesday session. This took place at the beginning of the session. I guess the session started around 1:30, and there were maybe been a couple presentations before that. I wasn't there for this, but I did review it later, and you can find it online if you go to the City of Santa Cruz website, and you can actually go through every exciting moment of it. We first hear the city attorney's report, which essentially says zero and useful information to the public. The one thing you are going to notice in passing is the Sean Arlt case, which is a case, of course, of the guy who was murdered by Santa Cruz police, killed, if you will. We don't want to say murdered. There hasn't been a formal conviction, has there? but rather let's say he has been shot dead, and the guy who did it, I think it was Officer Bailey, I may be mistaken, if I'm wrong about that, my apologies to the SCPD. The city's being sued by the friends and relatives of Sean Arlt. And we didn't get to hear too much of it. I read you, I guess, some of it on Sunday, the Sunday before the city council meeting. I think I read to you. Because you wouldn't have known what the details were unless you actually wrote the city council demanding the documents. And I did, and I got the documents. You don't learn a hell of a lot more, but you know, learn the case is going back to court in November, middle of the month, and maybe there'll be more then. What I wanted, of course, is the police department to reveal and have our council members demand that the city reveal, and that we the community demand it. Perhaps that's even more important. Obviously, it is, actually. The DA's investigation, the officers' reports, the witnesses' reports that the police department got that we have not been able to see in terms of the shooting. All you got is a kind of a crappy video that they showed us. And the official, all is well, nothing to look at here, move along. Anyway, that's where we're going to hear. First you hear the city attorney, then you're going to hear the city manager talking about the homeless campground and the fencing situation and his explanation for it.
Thank you, Mayor Terrazas, members of the city council. The council met in closed session this afternoon at 12:30 in the courtyard conference room. On the closed session agenda were three items. Item A was a conference with legal counsel concerning liability claims. The claims of Pacific Bell Telephone, DBA AT&T California, and Jill E. Winters. Those claims are also listed on your consent agenda this afternoon as item 5. Also, there was a conference with...
Notice that you don't even hear that the claims, what happened, whether they were accepted or denied. And that happened the hour before. I'm not sure why. Usually it's pretty clear, and maybe I'm jumping the gun here. Maybe he says something about it later, but I don't think he does, which is sort of an additional level of secrecy or non-disclosure. Here's more from Tony Condotti, the city attorney.
Legal counsel concerning existing litigation in the matter of Arlt versus the city of Santa Cruz pending in the U.S. District Court. Council received a report from outside special counsel on that matter. There was no reportable action on that matter.
Outside special counsel, I'd be curious to know, and I probably can find out through the documents, who that counsel is. And if people want to follow it, they have to go directly to the court records to follow what kind of claims are made against the city, what kind of documents are being demanded. And what will probably end up happening is the city will make some kind of a settlement to this series of plaintiffs claiming abuses and killing by the city, unlawful killing. That's nice for the family of Sean Arlt, but the issue, of course, as to whether the police department is changing its practices, or the people who did this behavior, which would be called criminal behavior by other people if it were done, actually are held accountable. And, of course, they won't be. That really is the key and dangerous situation that we and other communities find themselves in, that are being essentially, held hostage by police departments because they have no accountability or very little until people rise up and demand it, and then you may get some personnel shifted around, and attorneys get big fat amounts of money for what they take to court, and even the surviving victims get some money, but the community doesn't get much out of it. Anyway, let's get back to what the city manager has to say about his dumping the homeless out into the cold in violation of previous promises and in spite of lots of money being available, apparently because of apprehensions about NIMBY nonsense. Let's hear some.
Thirdly, a public employee performance evaluation involving the city manager. There is a subsequent closed session this evening scheduled for 6 p.m. involving labor negotiations.
And regarding the city manager, this is actually the one time of the year when the city manager, well, maybe more than once a year, but it's on these occasions behind closed doors when the city manager supposedly gets a performance evaluation. And the community, in theory, at least before the city council goes into closed session, in the so-called open interval, when members of the community can comment on what's on the agenda of the closed session before it closes its doors, they can say, what the fuck is this city manager doing, making promises that he's breaking to the poorest of the poor in our community, or giving huge amounts of money to the police department, giving great amounts of power, pushing for laws, or in essence, getting together with officials to create, not really laws, the laws have been created. I'm thinking of the idea of creating more and more closed areas has been done to deal with protesters through the years. In 2010 at the City Hall, and then again with the Freedom Sleepers in 2015, 16, and 17, to essentially crush protest. Do we really want to have someone who treats the Constitution like a piece of toilet paper? No, don't think so. But that's the only time you get to say anything about it. And, of course, he can be fired by the city council. But no one has ever had the guts to propose it. And I don't hear that coming from Drew Glover or Justin Cummins or anybody else who's running for city council at this particular term. But maybe I just have missed that. I haven't been going to all the forums. Let's hear some more.
With the SEIU Local 521.
Thank you, City Attorney. Now I'd like to call on the City Manager if he has a report today.
Yes, I have a brief update on a couple of items for you this afternoon. First, I want to give you an update on the emergency shelter and the River Street Camp, and then also on the temporary parks closure. First, I'll start by just going over the big picture in terms of the overall goals that we have relative to sheltering services.
And he's put up on the board a diagram, or I should say, a placard that says Emergency Shelter Update Overarching Goals.
As you all know, obviously, providing shelter services is a major issue in our community, in our region, and state of California.
But not in the agenda of the city manager or the city council. What this placard or this PowerPoint presentation is actually what it is, says is maximize indoor shelter bed capacity through the winter months, which means 60 beds that are walk-in shelter, and a couple of, and 20 extra beds, maybe another 20 extra beds for the Paul Lee Loft, which is a program with a waiting list that requires documentation of a path to housing, funding for it, like, you know, government check that you bring with you. Also up is conduct robust community process to site the interim shelter facility. Have you heard of any robust community process that happened to determine where this should be sited? It was supposed to be available. The siting was supposed to have been done by the end of June, and folks were then, including the campground people, were to be moved or allowed access to a much broader shelter program that would also take a much larger number of folks from around who are outside, because homeless campground, as I mentioned before, the River Street campground only shoehorned in about 60 people out of hundreds and hundreds, 1,000 to 2,000 people. But that didn't happen at the end of June. It didn't happen at the end of August. And it still hasn't happened. Instead, you have a 60-bed shelter, less than last year, is being proposed for the winter as the only walk-in winter shelter. It isn't even walk-in winter shelter. I think you have to be bussed in, but it's the only one you can actually go to a spot that night and get it. The other programs, Paul Lee Loft, Page Smith Community House, Rebelle Family Shelter, River Street Shelter, you had to be on a waiting list, and the waiting lists were closed for many of those groups, at least for the one that I researched recently. It's the one that you can actually, if you're on the waiting list, then supposedly the police, when they give you a ticket and force you to move along in the middle of the night, later you get your ticket dismissed by the city attorney and not taken to court. Oh joy, oh rapture. Of course, you can't get the police to stop from ticketing you can't get to stop them from harassing you, because the Homeless Lack of Services Center has colluded with the police in not doing that in order to provide, it seems to me, the police to have useful tools to go after poor people outside. in essence, to placate the howls of those who are comfortable in their warm beds at home but are worried about possible bike thefts. Or, who knows, recycling bin thefts. Or just that nasty-looking tent on the street outside. Or somebody parked in the vehicle nearby and sleeping in a vehicle. That sort of thing. Also on this PowerPoint presentation says, move to a regional HAP-led approach. As of July 1st, River Street Camp and all the other winter shelter options became a HAP program, although RSC, where it was city-operated, the River Street Campground. In other words, they're going to babble about who's doing the planning and who's consulting and who we talk to next and how long we talk and what other meetings are going to be held. So let's hear a little more.
So our major focus has been to really maximize the amount of indoor shelter bed capacity through the winter months.
And that's simply a lie. I mean, it's just straight. It's less than, it was half of what it was last year. And they're just not using the money they have to be able to do that. And they aren't doing the plan, following the plan that they said they were going to follow, even to maintain for this 60 people a campground through April of next year, which is what they also promised in August.
And we've had to do temporary tents, but really it's mostly out of the fact that we weren't able to identify permanent facilities. But that continues to be a goal, obviously.
Unable to identify permanent facilities. There's just no room. There's no space. This is the bogus, cruel, and really mendacious claim made by mayors of the most liberal variety, like Catherine Byers back in 2000 or 1999, when there was an actual homeless task force and a lot of homeless activists who were raising loud voices and putting a lot of pressure on the city council. And Chris Crone, the great liberal, was part of the incoming new Three Amigos majority that supposedly was going to end the sleeping ban and going to set up public restrooms that were open at night and all that kind of thing. But no, didn't happen because of the there's just no place for them, you see. I mean, there's places for large five-story parking garages that will bury a library, but there's no place for homeless folks. It's obviously it's a question of priorities, and it's a question of who's in power and what they want.
We want to conduct a robust community process to site an interim shelter facility.
Another lie. They've had plenty of time to do some of the robust community process since this initial report came out in May of last year, this whole issue, and they've had a year to have this robust community process. What there has been is a robust right-wing series of power moves by groups like Take Back Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Neighbors, Santa Cruz Together, Downtown Neighbors, Downtown Association, Chamber of Commerce. If I'm wrong about any of these groups, and are there any members who wish to point out that they haven't joined in this anti-homeless chorus, please step forward. I'd like to correct myself. But these are groups that have raged to, in correspondence to City Council, that they just, not in my neighborhood, not in my backyard. And that's the robust public process that I've heard about. Maybe there's been more public process that I have heard about, but it just didn't come my way. I guess Jessica York didn't mention it and didn't hear about it.
Again, that is because ultimately we need permanent, long-term, year-round facilities, and we've clearly learned that siting facilities is a major challenge in our community.
It's a major challenge. We really need it. We're going to be talking about it. We'll have to cite it somewhere. This is language that substitutes for action, that covers up lack of action.
And Rick is going to require quite a bit of outreach. And then finally, that this is really a regional issue, and so a regional approach.
And let's move right along. It's going to require a lot of outreach, and which we haven't done, which we should have done for the last 15 months. But, it doesn't bother me. I've got a home on the west side or wherever. I'm not sure actually where Martine lives. There's been some discussion about actually having a tent village right outside his home. This is actually under discussion. Again, there, as you may be hearing, and you will be hearing actually, there are plans to begin the kind of tent city that the city is refusing to deal with and is essentially lying about in document after document and city council after city council and city manager's report after city manager's report.
Which needs to be taken relative to being able to provide the services that the community needs in order to address the impacts that we have every day in our community.
Pretty vague stuff. I mean, if the guy were honest enough to say, you know, I've gotten lots of nasty letters from well-to-do residents who don't like the idea of the campground being placed here or placed there very specifically, and I've decided that their opinions are more important than the needs of the homeless people at this time. It's not a popular position. It's not a liberal position, but it would probably be, I would think, a far more honest position. It would also be a more realistic position because it's what's really happening. But they don't want to do that. That's what these liberals are, unfortunately, quite accustomed to doing, which is trying to preserve the appearance of humanitarianism, but in no way the substance of it.
And so these are really the things that we are working on long term, and because of a variety of changes that have happened, and I'll get into that in a little bit.
Empty rhetoric. Here's another screen that appears. Emergency shelter update. Current HAP status. Close the River Street camp effective November 30th. Open the Veterans of Foreign Wars winter shelter effective November 15th. Continue to identify, support, and expand current and new shelter programs. Again, it's happy talk, but really it masks a significant reduction of shelter, a breaking of promises, and an ignoring of the real, both the real needs and the real resources available.
We're very, I think, in a good position that finally, with respect to because this has been such a major issue in our community, that finally we're getting really a regional focus. And it's not just now Santa Cruz sort of led effort to address this issue.
But if they're getting a regional focus, why are they reducing the shelter? Why are they breaking their word to the people in the campground? Why are they not spending some of that $30 million? Why are they not supporting the day and night winter shelter program, let's say, that Brent Adams is doing? Why are they spending money putting up fences all over the parks? You're going to hear their excuses for this soon. But it seems to me the questions unanswered make us tend to believe that the answers are rather straightforward. They both don't give a shit, and more important, what they really care about is the ideology of those who don't want to have anything to do with the homeless and want to see them driven out of the community. But, of course, want the funding for the homeless to keep coming into the community.
And I'll talk about the state funding that's available and all that in a few minutes. But because of that, we really have focused on having the HAP, which is the Homeless Action Partnership, which is an entity comprised of all of the cities and the county working together to really address this issue. So that's a really critical and important shift. So through the HAP process, we're now working on how do we address this issue moving forward. It had historically only focused on the winter shelter, but now, again, we're working on what is really the permanent solution here or on.
And what do they mean by, or what does he mean by working on? What he means, perhaps, is putting together a presentation for City Council that will continue his discussion of the possible meetings that will be discussing more discussions of this as the winter goes on and as he retires to his warm bed and others shiver and some of them die outside.
Ongoing changes. So with respect to the HAP, in our latest discussions, it was determined that it made sense to close the River Street camp effective November 30th. This is, again, in the context of opening up a new winter shelter facility, indoor facility, at the Veterans facility over in Live Oak.
It's not a new facility. This is the same facility that they had last year. So, and the notion that what's the reason for shutting it down and breaking their promises? He is simply saying, well, we decided that was a good idea. It doesn't tell us why, does it? He doesn't honestly discuss or give us a sense of what was the particular problem with continuing that. Where's the financial problem, if there was a financial problem? You know, come clean, please. But You can beg all you want. The bureaucrats don't have to come clean.
We want to obviously also continue to identify, support, and expand current and new shelter programs. And there are current discussions to providing some additional shelter relative to veterans. In addition, we are talking about trying to provide additional shelter capacity and support for women.
Talking about trying to provide discussions are... They have the money. They have the buildings. They have the space. There are huge amounts of green belt space around Santa Cruz. And there's certainly the community will, at least among some groups, to even staff this whole thing. But they haven't, and of course there's no mention of the closed car park facility that was going to be open on the edge of town that would help get 50 people in. 50 people with their vehicles, give them a place at least to sleep and park during the night, though they have to roam around during the day with their vehicle somewhere else. Here's more.
That's one of the things that the River Street Camp was able to do, I think, pretty effectively, and there is an ongoing concern that need is there, and we wanted to try to see if we can provide and expand those.
So the River Street Campground was doing it very effectively, so what are we going to do? We're going to close the River Street Campground. And so we think that's very effective, so we're really going to talk about that some more, and we're conferring with the HAP people to see what is to be done, and we're concerned about women and vets. It doesn't really make me sick. It should. I've become inured to it, I guess. Here's some more.
So that type of support here as soon as possible.
A lie. It was possible before. They were doing it before, at least in a very limited way. And they promised they were going to do it until April for the 60 people. Then they cut it off. So he reminds me of Trump. He's a little more apologetic and nervous about it than Trump is. Trump has been used to doing this, I think, for decades as a con man and a individual who's kind of a Barnum and Bailey type. Bernal is not really that kind of character so much. I used to know him years ago as an assistant city manager under then city manager and Führer Dick Wilson, who was the previous city manager. Bernal always struck me as a somewhat more compassionate fellow. Of course, that was before he became city manager.
As I mentioned earlier, we are in a position where, you know, the state has allocated funds to our county to address this issue.
And the PowerPoint presentation says, emergency shelter update, current opportunities, approximately $11 million ESH and HEAP funds, not sure what those are, but agency funds, coming to the county as early as January 2019. Up to $20 million of Measure H funds for homelessness programs. And ongoing and robust work to identify additional shelter beds with existing nonprofit partners. As though it's really hard to find these. These beds are hiding. You just can't really, you know, it's really going to be difficult to find them.
And it's recognized that providing emergency shelter is a critical piece of this, and so we have approximately $10 million that needs to be allocated and spent within the next 2 years in order to address that, and you've heard presentations about this.
And here really is kind of a key. Emergency shelter has now become the watchword. It became, and I think the reason it's the watchword is because it's become clear that there's so many people on the streets that it's becoming embarrassing. It's upsetting the tourists. It's upsetting the residents. It just doesn't look good. And there are also other cities that are, you know, taking so-called action, not really. But they're taking at least the appearance of action around these issues. And so emergency shelter, which 3 years ago was a forbidden phrase, it was all about affordable housing and accessible housing and a pathway to housing, in response to which the Homeless Lack of Services Center out at Coral Street shut down its meals, shut down its facilities to a drop-in shelter, and insisted you have a specific pathway to housing. You have checks that would be available to pay for some of what was going on. It was all focused suddenly on supposedly providing housing to people, which of course didn't exist. Another one of those hoaxy things, and it's particularly slightly goring to those of us whose work helped to set up the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which was originally called Free Meal, and before after that was called the Homeless Community Resource Center in the 90s, through protests, through embarrassing the city mothers and fathers and mayors and council members, through essentially forcing the police to work overtime because we were constantly sleeping out and marching around and making demands and raising our voices, you know, embarrassing and frightening the horses, that sort of thing. They set up an area on the outskirts of town so, you know, those homeless could go there at least and get a meal and get out of our hair, for God's sake. And also we could pat ourselves on the back and say what wonderful folks we are. I wonder what great things we're doing for these poor folks. But, of course, as gentrification set in here in Santa Cruz, you got this much more nasty, sharp-edged, fascistic approach, which is to essentially label the homeless as criminals, label the homeless as a combination of either skunks, punks, and drunks. They're too idle, they're bums, or they're junkies, or they're alcoholics. That's the sort of the liberal side of the fascist equation, where it's not these aren't human beings who are displaced urban residents. These are defective people who really they need all kinds of special treatments. It's a very diverse population with many different kinds of people who have many different problems, and many of them are just you have to. They have to be controlled. They have to be retrained. They have to be given special support services. Housing isn't, you know, low-income rental housing isn't the way to do it. I mean, that's, you know, we need the town housing space for the incoming Silicon Valley and university folks. And, you know, I mean, that's, you know, town is growing. You got to look to the future there. I mean, that's what we're really looking for.
And in addition, with the advent of Measure H that's on the ballot in November, there's a possibility of an additional $20 million to provide for shelter facilities. So there is this opportunity to, from a regional perspective, to really try to address this need for emergency shelter as well as providing for homeless housing programs.
And again, I thought I'd heard differently about some of these figures, but it adds up to $30 million, $11 million coming to the county as early as 2019 January, $20 million of Measure H funds if that gets passed, which I think it's looking like it will. But I think there is also currently state funding as well that already exists. In any case, no reason for the cutbacks now, particularly in the winter. It just shows extreme indifference to the real situation for poor people outside. And this endless talk about robust work to identify additional shelter beds. They're running around with clipboards and, you know, telescopes in search of those beds. If only they could find them, all would be well.
I mentioned earlier, we do need to be able to work with our nonprofit providers to provide these services. You know, as with the River Street shelter, the city took on that effort, but it really isn't within our wheelhouse to operate a shelter, and we really do need a robust partnership and the ability to work with and help.
Why isn't it, Martine, within your wheelhouse to operate a shelter? You know, why can't you provide sufficient incentive for a nonprofit to operate a shelter? Or even, you know, a no-profit. You got people like Brent Adams who want to do a sanctuary village. I don't always agree with everything he says. But instead, you are... Well, you provided no funding at all. In fact, you took away the agreement you had to have a shelter for storage material, even just for homeless people to have their stuff stored in the winter. They didn't have that facility last winter because of your pulling it away. The winter shelter, the warming center program that he has, is pathetically small. Certainly well intended, but, you know, it doesn't have anywhere near the support that the more restrictive winter shelter program, the remains of the winter shelter program that's happening this year, the 60 people program out at the the Veterans Hall on 7th Avenue has. So, I don't believe it. I don't believe it, Martin.
Of nonprofits in our community that can provide these services and work with us to do that at a regional level.
Here's the emergency shelter update. Next thing that comes on the screen, August 28th, Council direction to approve staff's recommended 2018-19 Homeless Action Partnership North County Winter Shelter Plan by extending not to exceed April 15th, 2019, and expanding shelter bed capacity at the River Street Camp in the absence of another HAP winter shelter option. Authorizing staff with HAP to explore a temporary shelter bed and related hygiene base service expansion of the Homeless Services Center Paul Lee Loft. I've talked about that, 20 more beds for the Paul Lee Loft, 20 more tent spaces for the River Street Campground to go until April of next year. This is what the decision was on August 28th. And authorizing the staff with HAP to explore a proposed Association of Faith Communities Safe Parking Program. Let's hear what the Fuhrer says about that.
Just to remind council with respect to the latest actions that you took on August 28th, the council approved the recommendations before you with respect to moving forward with the HAP and the North Winter Shelter Plan. And that included authorization to extend the River Street Camp, again, in order to transition the camp and the winter shelter program into one program. Authorizing the staff to work with a CAP to explore a temporary shelter. The idea then there was to be able to transition seamlessly from the River Street Camp to the winter shelter into an indoor facility and to expand the Homeless Services Center at the Paul Lee Loft in terms of their capacity to provide shelter services there.
Notice he's not mentioning the specific number of beds that were particularly authorized. It's all being rather vaguely put as we're going to work on expanding these programs. He is doing this because to acknowledge this is to acknowledge that these aren't going to be created. At least some of them aren't. The River Street Campground is not. The Association of Faith Communities Safe Parking Program is not. And it's not clear what's happening with the Paul Lee Loft getting 20 more beds if you can get on their waiting list. And then if you're on their waiting list, how long you have to wait to get it. It's not going to be in time for winter shelter, for people who are looking for winter shelter. That's why this whole thing about winter shelter on August 28th was a hoax. It wasn't about winter shelter for the majority at all.
And to explore a proposed a safe parking program. Some things have changed since then. Program for a safe parking has been taken off the table due to concerns relative to siting. Again, something that needs to be explored further.
Concerns related to siting. You know, bigots yowls about homeless people being in the area is what my translation of that is, but I don't know. It's not very clear what he says. Suddenly, the biggest part of this program, 50 vehicles being allowed to park at night, is gone. Whisk. And all you get is, oh, we're still concerned and exploring this. You know, that's gone. It's off the table. That's all you get to hear. No explanation. Just flat. Bye-bye.
Unfortunately, we continue to talk to the Homeless Services Center about the expansion of services there, and we'll continue to do that. However, the timing to do that in a seamless way is very difficult at this time.
They're going to talk about it, but the timing is difficult to do in a seamless way. Does that give you any clearer information about that?
However, we have, as part of this process, allocated additional funding to at least maintain the existing Paul Lee Loft program because that was set to close without additional funding. So part of this new approach involves preserving those existing shelter beds at the Paul Lee Loft.
Well, wait a minute. The program was due to expand by 20 beds, not to close. That was what was stated on August 23rd or 28th. So what's this sudden rewriting of history that it was going to close? And again, he's not talking about the number of beds at all. Again, notice that. Because that would uncomfortably remind us of what, in fact, is now being turned on its head, swept away, with a very swift blow.
As well as the addition of the winter shelter over in Live Oak. And then, of course, we're working to see if we can provide additional services, shelter services for veterans and women and children in particular.
They're just working oh so hard. I mean, that's really, we're working really hard. It kind of reminds me to some extent of the frustration I hear from Brent Adams, who, if you criticize something he's doing, will get angry with you because he's working so hard. And I can kind of appreciate that from him because he is working so hard. He's not getting a comfortable office and $200,000 a year like Bernal is. And he is working hard, damn hard. You can see it by the stuff he puts up, the work he does, and the different stuff he posts, as well as by the fact that he has a storage program that's actually operational and doesn't cost homeless people anything. It's there. It appears. It's concrete. It's on the ground. It's time for me to take another one of those musical breaks before I break out, or maybe it's too late for that. Let's try and do that now.
Mozarts are born among the poor, taken by hunger or by disease or war. Where is the music that we might have heard if fortune was to say they should stay? How many live and die and never know their worth, toiling in darkness by an accident of birth? Can we truly hope for justice on this earth someday? We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday. Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome someday.
How many Mozarts are born among the poor, taken by hunger or by disease or war? Where is the music that we might have heard if fortune was to say they should stay? How many live and die and never know their worth, toiling in darkness by an accident of birth? Can we truly hope for justice on this earth someday?
And that was a bit of Roy Zimmerman, another one from the Fawcetts, On Fire. And, of course, it was his version of We Shall Overcome, which he calls Someday. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert. This is these are the failing days of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're still studioless. We have patched together the collective a little bit, but it's a ramshackle kind of patch that's been done. A lot of factional, conflict, I guess, is the way to put it. And I don't know how long we're going to survive here. We need a place to be, and we need support. So if you think that you've enjoyed this, support us. Keep your eyes open for a 10x10 space where we can go. We can do it in an outdoor yard somewhere. We can set up our own shack. We just need to have access to the internet, electricity, and a bathroom. And you'll get a reward for this. That's $300 or more. And if you give me a call, if you have any tips, you could be the one who gets the bucks. 423-4833 is the number, 423-4833. So call in and let me know if you see the space in Santa Cruz or near Santa Cruz, because that's what we need and we just can't find one. The gentrification process has really priced us out. Anyway, there is more to Martin Bernal's explanations of, or non-explanations, I should say, of why the city is breaking its word to the homeless. I mean, why bother you if these people haven't got any power to fight back? Why shouldn't you? I mean, after all, heck with them. But I'm going to leave that to you to check out. You can find that information on the city's website. You can hear the whole gloomy city council meeting if you want to listen to it. I'm going to play a few of the voices that spoke up at the council meeting and an interview or two about that. So that's what's happening next. We're listening here at the Santa Cruz City Council break to Pat Malo, who's here to testify on the issue of a cannabis tax reduction. Let's see if we can butt in here. So, Pat, what are you going to be saying at the City Council?
You know, I'm going to be talking about how the need to get this new experiment called licensed, regulated, legal adult use cannabis in Santa Cruz. You know, we have a very small group of people who have been able to obtain licenses, really statewide, but locally as well. And they need to survive to be able to offer.
How many people have been able to get licenses locally?
Locally, I think we have in Santa Cruz City, we probably have 12 groups that are in process, you know, and there was hundreds, if not thousands, of small businesses existing in Santa Cruz City before these new regulations. And it's not all the city's fault whatsoever. It's the state put in, set of rules that are, you know, really hard for anyone without major funding or any individual, no matter how wealthy you are, to be able to be involved with. And so what it's done is it's taken maybe the biggest industry locally, and definitely one that normal folks without the, you know, blessings of college degrees and other, you know, certifications.
How has the price of marijuana expanded or changed in the last 2 years?
It's gone way, way, way up at the stores, partially because of, you know, huge new tax burdens that can go up to 35-40% when you tally all the different, local taxes.
So let's say a gram. What's been the rise?
I mean, at the store, a gram now could pay upwards of $60 for 3.5 grams, which is getting into 10, 12 bucks a gram when you factor in all the tax.
Previously?
And, you know, previously, I would say that there's $5 grams accessible in the stores, and even much, much cheaper than that, patient or provider to patient in the old system.
Is it true that patient-provider collectives have essentially been wiped out?
They've been wiped out, except and limited to a five-card, you know, new kind of iteration of what a collective is. So the state has limited it up to 5 patients and has limited that those patients have to be the caregiver-patient relationship has been, you know, fleshed out a little more to make it more difficult. But, those small collectives, the big change has been that they haven't been able to access the legal market in dispensaries since 2018 because they would need these temporary licenses and licenses.
Well, I see Valerie Corral here. I understand she says that, I haven't talked to her at this point, but WAM has essentially been closed in
WAM has the blessing of their local, the city government county that they exist in, is in full support, but because the state regulations are so stringent, it's been really, really difficult for even an organization with explicit city and county support to be able to get through this. And, you know, there's a few issues that came up with just the old WAM location that made it so that we had to find a new one, which, you know, it costs.
Low-income accessibility. That's always been my concern with you, Pat, and with all marijuana providers.
Yeah. So, the old way that people were able to get cannabis was more in that provider, patient-to-patient format. There's always been a problem with all dispensaries being able to, you know, meet the need, but it's been made even more difficult by, you know, making.
Good luck. Looks like the Fuhrer is calling for order here.
Thank you.
And then there was a line of cannabis merchants concerned with getting rid of the very high taxes that are being leveled on marijuana, which I regard as a form of reefer madness stuff, again, drug war stuff, that you don't get these taxes on pharmaceuticals, not so much on booze and tobacco in the same way. Although, I don't speak with great knowledge of the last two items or even pharmaceuticals. It seems to me there's very significant and repeated taxes at different levels of the chain of marijuana growth, distribution, sales, and so forth. I do want to say, and it was surprising and a positive thing to see, that Rochelle Narayan, along with Christopher Crone, they were the only two who took this position, wanted to immediately reduce the tax to, I think, some 3%, which was in addition to a bunch of other taxes that marijuana providers, I should say, merchants, sellers, they aren't providers so much anymore, would have to pay the city. And this was blocked by the council majority of Matthews, Terrazas, Watkins, and Chase, and stalled again. We want more information. We need to know more about it, and so forth and so on, which I wasn't persuaded by. But thank you, Rochelle and Chris, for that vote, although, again, it doesn't really have a terribly large effect on low-income people either, because low-income people, even during the previous situation for medical marijuana, were not getting access to medical marijuana the way they needed to. That's pretty much that. I'm going to now give you another one of those musical breaks so I can take a breath, and then I'll be back.
Some of you may recall that recently there was a flap over a vagina. I'm talking about the Michigan State Assembly. Michigan State Assembly, where Representative Lisa Brown was arguing against an anti-choice bill. And she said, "I'm flattered you're also interested in my vagina, but no means no." That's what she said. And Republican Representative Mike Calton, who paradoxically is a dick, punished her for that. So offended was he by her word choice, by her language, he withdrew her from debate for a couple of days. So in this song, I'll be playing both parts. I'll be playing Mike, and I'll be playing Lisa, in a little thing I call the Vagina Dialogues. Well, that word is offensive. Well, maybe when it's said by you, makes me feel hypertensive. You're welcome, it's the least I could do. Women would behoove themselves to remove themselves and leave their private parts in our hands. Don't say that word. You mean vagina? Don't say that word. You mean vagina? Don't say that word. You mean vagina? Don't say it. Vagina, 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 vagina. Not in front of a lady. Well, Mike, you know that's where it is. It's so low down and shady. Are we having an anatomy quiz? If women would behave themselves, they could save themselves the trouble they're always causing me. Don't say that word. You mean vagina? Don't say it again. Vagina, 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 vagina. What could be more ladylike? It doesn't really have teeth, Mike. It's where you came from and where you want to go.
And if you can't say vagina, if you can't say vagina, well, that's kind of gynophobic, don't you know? I don't like women cursing. I think that it's a gosh darn shame. I'm just that kind of a person, a vagina by another name. If women could contain themselves and restrain themselves, well, they wouldn't be oppressed by men. Don't say the V word. You mean vagina? Reword the key word. You mean vagina? You're messing with my sensibilities. With my vagina, you're making me feel ill at ease. With my vagina, don't say that word. You mean vagina? Just let me handle it, dear. We'll take it from here. Thank you.
That was the Vagina Dialogues. Again, another one from The Faucets on Fire, which I may be playing soon here. But let's get back to the shitty council and the oral communications, or I call it the anal communications. I'm not sure if that's really a fair, because it's those of us who are talking, it deserves to be treated more than simply fart givers, but that seems to be how the council regards it. They placed it at the end of the council agenda at a time when almost everybody has gone home. And it's a way to segregate and lessen the impact of it and essentially remove it from the main substance of the council discussion. Although it does have, I suppose, the advantage of allowing people who get off work at 5 to hustle down there at 5:30 and talk, although it used to be at 7 when people could actually come and talk then and not have to worry about conflicts with work and doctor's appointments and things of that sort. Anyway, here's some of the oral communications period around the issues of a shelter and homeless civil rights.
And he asked for 4 minutes. Yes, yeah.
Okay, members of the community, those who are remaining, and members of the council. The River Street Campground, City Manager Bernal tells us, is slated for dispersal at the end of November, breaking the promises by his underlings, Susie O'Hara and Tina Scholl, that it would last through the winter until April. Instead, the population will be shoehorned into a small nighttime-only shelter, leaving little or no room for other winter shelter refugees. This winter shelter hoax had its rough draft in August when these two bureaucrats announced, without saying so, that there would be no winter shelter. The so-called expansion of the Paul Lee Loft and the River Street Campground promised preferred programs which had long waiting lists, no walk-up, and no first-come, first-serve options. The vehicular park, which was promised 50 spaces, has apparently been abandoned because of bigot pressure from NIMBYs. We shouldn't be surprised. All prior so-called winter shelter programs were PR fig leaves that offered shelter for less than 5 to 10% of those outside. But this time, the community has some choices it didn't have before. Federal court has ruled in the Boise case that unless a city has enough shelter for its homeless population, its laws against survival camping are unlawful. This, you would think, would prompt Chief Mills and new PNR boss Tony Elliott to pause in their generous use of trespass and no resting in the park at night citations, which, however, have massively increased in the last year. Camping tickets are still being unconstitutionally given, but less so. Police now have, probably with the support of City Attorney Tony Condotti, begun using other anti-homeless laws to attempt to ticket away those outside. Last year, the appearance of so many visible homeless people in public areas at night, as well as a Hep A outbreak in Southern California, may have prompted the tolerated San Lorenzo campground in the benchlands and the facilities open there. And this year, we see hardened cruelty of an anti-homeless agenda in operation. Fences all around San Lorenzo Park. The closing of the bathrooms there, again, as the ones outside these chambers are closed and locked day and night when this council is not here. New fences are being raised around the post office.
was perhaps to discourage Food Not Bombs workers from supporting those who choose to sleep together at night outside the main post office. There is no legal place for folks to sleep, so they must sleep where they must. Instead of spending resources to open up spaces, even like the limited San Lorenzo campground last year, city tightwads are putting up fences, funding whack-a-mole-type operations, and endorsing the Downtown Association's private downtown snitch program, which it pompously calls ambassadors. These visible attacks on poor people outside are risky. What do we need to do? Support real homeless people, not the pathway to poverty programs. When will the homeless lack of services center restore meals it traditionally provided, remove its gates, ID checks, guards, and low-impact zone? When will groups like Smart Solutions take real action to demand those outside not be treated like pariahs fleeing police, facing locked facilities, and braving nighttime vigilante surveillance and harassment? Agencies receiving the big bucks and city recognition are not providing the vital services that need to be seen, and they need to be seen for what they are. Those who care can then support homeless people directly or through agencies that actually provide more than closed waiting lists, phone numbers that don't answer. There's plenty of campground space in Santa Cruz if the bleating of bigots is ignored. Conscience in Action and Huff meet tomorrow at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 11. Come to a Food Not Bombs meal Saturday or Sunday at 4 p.m. outside the post office, if there's any sidewalk space left, not fenced off. Support the day and night shelter program of Brent Adams. Keep your ears open for the call to support next steps for a meaningful emergency shelter alternative. This may mean a coalition of renters, students, the disabled, the elderly, and other marginalized groups. One thing is sure, it's not coming from this council.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you. Norris. Next speaker, please.
Hi, my name's Kate Oates. I live on Market Street. My son, he goes to De La Viega Elementary School, and he also takes the bus at Grant Street Park. I was made aware of the closure of the park the day before, I believe, that we met up at the park. We did have a city official that met with us. They were talking about the beautification that was going to go, that was going to happen, and the fixing of the bathrooms. There was nothing mentioned of the temporary homeless shelter that was also closed. So I feel, as a parent, a little duped that we were told what was happening in our park, and it is our neighborhood park. And now currently we have like 30 children and parents who are standing huddled against a fence that is not open to us. In the morning when the bus comes, it is an unsafe situation at the moment. We are also not given a time for when it was going to reopen. So there's that part of it. I am part of the community who is trying to support the homeless community in town. We may not be as loud as those who are against it, who want the temporary homeless shelters closed. We are actually meeting this weekend, a group of us from our neighborhood, from the Grant Street Park neighborhood, to discuss ways that we can move forward and help what is going on in town. But the fact that it's being closed before the rainy season is very disheartening to us. We are concerned about their safety. As members of the community, and just frustrated with the amount of communication that we're hearing also. So thank you.
Ms. Oaks, if you could leave your email address.
Sure.
There's a update that's been posted on our city website.
Okay.
And so we have information that way. And then also there was a slide presentation that was given earlier today that we can send out, so your neighbors will have that as part of your
okay.
presentation. So if you leave your email address, we'll make sure that that goes out.
Sure.
Does that also include the bus stop issue?
The bus stop, I've already emailed the city PD and city manager about.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Can we get a report back, possibly?
Sure, I'll follow up. Next speaker, please.
Hello, Council. My name is Dora Berlanga, and I'm a community member for over 40 years. I've lived in this community. I've worked, I've volunteered, I've done quite a bit here. I volunteered for the Downtown Streets team, a blessing in disguise, you guys allowing them to come here. I also work for the River Camp shelter. I was also here when you guys had your meeting, when you guys extended the date. It was the proudest day, one of the proudest days of my life, when you guys extended that to April. I go home to work, and I kind of find out you guys are closing us in the mid-November. You guys lied. I don't understand how you guys can all sleep at night when, with this being known. A winter shelter, a joke, okay? It's really a joke. People only lay their heads there. River Camp provided these people a home, a safe place where they can lay their head, leave their personal belongings, go look for work. And if you guys would just come and visit the camp, you'd see that the self-esteem of these people have gone up. Mine has. I'm homeless as well. And now you're taking my job away. You're putting me back out on the street with the rest of these people. How can you guys do this? You guys downright lied when you said that you had enough funding till April of next year, and now all of a sudden, boom, no money? Where did it go?
Fences.
Seriously, are you spending it on the fences, putting it around the parks? Now you're not only closing me out of the parks, you're closing out people that do actually have homes. Again, I've been in this community, and I have faith in this community. I've gone to school here. I've done my part. And now you're kicking me out in the street again. Why? What? Come visit the camp. Half the people that live there have gotten jobs. They are. They look forward to life. They're not dealing with the criminal elements that's out there. Just because we're homeless doesn't mean that we're criminals. I'm educated. I'm a retired firefighter. I've done quite a bit. Don't, you know. Anyways, I'm just going to leave it at that. But you guys lied to us.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hi, my name's Cherie Peterson, and I started talking to you 4 years ago about my hundreds of dollars worth of tickets for having the audacity to fall asleep in my car. And then in the last 4 years and 1 month, I've been living in the street, period, in the flat out dirt in front of dentist's office, doctor's office, behind coffee shops, everywhere where other homeless people are this far away or whatever. I've had 7 sleeping bags robbed, so many things robbed, it would take years to tell you. But I just want to say that, you know, you keep promising you're going to build a shelter for us. When? San Francisco's built 10-story apartment. San Jose's built 8-story apartment. What is Santa Cruz doing? They're going, oh, we'll think about it next year. We'll think about it next Tuesday. How about, like, never? You've never broken ground on nothing. There's a 32-bed shelter over there. I've had my name in for 4 years. I was in the hospital for 5 days recently. I have a lot of health problems. I'm legally blind. I'm handicapped. But I'm out there on the street. Luckily, I have my walker to carry all my junk around. I go to Cabrillo. You know, I don't let homelessness stop me. I just carry on because I want to have a house. I want to bake muffins in the morning and be a real person like you and everyone else, you know. And I just can't understand why you say homeless people are all the same. A lot of us don't drink. We don't do any drugs. And we want a home. And what's your solution? What's your solution for the winter? I told my daughter, who's a millionaire, oh, I think I'm going to kill myself this winter, because last winter I almost froze to death. 3 fingers froze. I froze my face. I froze my arms trying to find my son, you know, and I just can't see going through another winter having nowhere to be.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. Next speaker. Are you up? Go ahead. Next speaker.
I'm not really too sure about what to say about the homelessness. I am personally homeless myself, and I am contracting and doing studies in the National Forest. All I gotta say is that, you know, the homeless crowd is always out on the streets, and, you know, they're usually having a good time. There's not really too many people that are out there causing that much trouble. You know, I occasionally hear the cops running this way, running that way, but honestly, I think the homeless crowd here is one of the best homeless crowds that I've, you know, actually had time to participate with. Like, I have really good friends here, like the pirate and his girlfriend, they're awesome, and like everyone else that I've, you know, hung out with in this town. Like, They're here, and I just wish that city would get together at least like a test or like some sort of like piece, chunk of property or something to start for, like, you know, people that actually have the ambition to become successful through, you know, self-sustaining themselves. And that, exactly like, you know, the women that have been up here have talked about, had you know, brought that forth. So I just want to touch bases with that. And what I'm finding out in the forest and with the evolution and, you know, cross contamination through all the past years' poisons and stuff is kind of scary, because, you know, I'm a man of God, and if we don't correct certain things, then this world could become toxic and revelations might come sooner than we expect.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. Next speaker, please.
Hello, my name is Francoise. I have been here about 3.5 months. And I'm here to show support for the people that don't have a place to call home. I'm here to support the people that are trying to sleep. Animals need to sleep. Bees need to sleep. Birds need to sleep. Monarch butterflies, the sea lions, they all need to sleep. Without sleep, you can get sick. And so I say, when you have people that are going around waking people up who have no place to rest their head but on the ground, on the earth, you're giving them a death sentence. I want to tell you what happened to me about a month ago. I rented a room from a woman who was very kind, and she charged me $400 to stay in one room so I would have a place to stay while I looked for a permanent place to live. I moved here to be near my grandchildren. I was walking down the street, Front Street. I had bought some groceries, and I had bought too many groceries. And I tripped on the sidewalk, and all my groceries fell on the ground, and I fell on my knees. 8 people walked by. They were clean, well-dressed. One looked like he was a businessman. They didn't say anything. They didn't say, "Do you need some help? Are you hurt?" What I felt when they walked by, first was shock.
Thank you. Thank you. Next speaker, please.
And what Francoise was not able to say, and she spoke to me about this outside in an interview that I think unfortunately has been lost, was that the person who helped her was a homeless person who came over and helped her pick up her groceries. This is the oral communication period at City Council, and we're going to hear a few more of them, but first a little musical relief.
A millennium ago, in 1985, when famine threatened the continent of Africa, Michael Jackson and a supergroup of pop music luminaries responded with "We Are the World." A song so powerful it made Americans think about starvation and poverty for 7 minutes and 14 seconds. Now, the threat of global climate change hangs over us all like a dark metaphor of actual carbon particles. And a new supergroup, Ted Nugent, Sarah Palin, Donald Trump, Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma have responded in song. There comes a time when the planet's going to hell, and
and we all wake up and smell the permafrost. And the ocean level's rising, all the experts tell us so. And we're doomed to fry and starve and die. What do experts know? We are the worst ancestors ever. No, there has never been a generation worse than us. And if our children's children ever get together, they'll roll their eyes and say, why didn't they make a better day? Take it from me. Global warming is a hoax perpetrated by the folks who make those wind farms. Yes, Virginia, there's a Santa Claus, but there isn't a North Pole. I said, come on, people, let's get together and win the war on coal. We are the worst ancestors ever. Generation worse than us. And if our children's children's children get together, they'll roll their eyes and say, why didn't they make a better day? The greatest generation beat the Nazis. The Cold War generation beat the Reds. Yes, they did. The Beat generation beat the Bungles. Generations ever done for us. And if our children's 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 children find a place on Mars where they might stay, they might say, who were those crackpots anyway?
And that was We Are the Worst from Roy Zimmerman's The Faucets on Fire. And now back to oral communications. A considerable number of speakers were concerned about the fencing and the closing of shelter and the increased harassment of homeless people outside. Hadn't seen such a line of speakers for a while.
I don't like public speaking, so I'll be quick. My name's Maya, and I'm an early childhood educator and a grad student here in Santa Cruz. I'm coming to the City Council to ask for a more compassionate and dignified way of treating those in our community that are experiencing homelessness. Things really shifted for me recently. My mom's from the UK, and my cousin came to visit, and she was just horrified by what was going on in Santa Cruz. She kept asking, how does your city, how does your country allow this to happen? She'd never seen homelessness like we have here. She just couldn't understand, and she didn't want to come downtown at all. And then it made me realize how horrible our conditions are here. I really want the city to stop criminalizing people who sleep outside, and to save money by providing real and dignified solutions, not just fencing off the post office and fencing off parks, and not just private security and police giving citations for trespassing. I want to see more access to bathrooms for people who sleep outside and access to services despite backgrounds and IDs and all of that. So thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hi, my name's Sean. I do water filtration in Harvey West and bike along the levee quite often. And I just want to say that the fencing I've seen go up and the winter shelter close, just really depressing and kind of embarrassing for this city. And I know that there's better solutions out there. I volunteer with Food Not Bombs and the Winter Shelter, and they're great programs that provide for desperate needs, for holes in the services provided by the city. Literally the warming shelter, we're trying to have a place for people to just be able to store their things, which is kind of mind-boggling that people aren't able to do that safely. And it's just really depressing time to be young in this country and just watching the homeless situation get worse over the decades while the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And literally Santa Cruz has some of the most expensive housing in the world. So I don't know how there's not money for it. I live up by the Outlook Apartments that was just sold for $50 million to apparently I heard Goldman Sachs. And I'm just here to demand more progressive solutions to a population that's really suffering. You know, I went to college and work full time. I have a hard enough time paying for rent, and the low income in the city are just really suffering, and I demand more support. Thank you.
Next speaker, please.
Pat Kittle of Santa Cruz. I have a sign here, which I've been holding up. No more wars for Israel. Israel did 9/11. That's a lot of evidence for that. And a investigative reporter right here at UCSC by the name of Christopher Bolin, bolin.com, will provide you with an overwhelming amount of scientific and forensic evidence that, yes, Israel did 9/11. The council members are all looking away because this is a fact they don't want to confront. That's to be expected, totally to be expected. But we give Israel welfare that's 7,000 times.
No.
On hold it?
Here, no, put on pause, please.
Oh, no, don't block people
up. Yeah.
But thanks. The foreign aid we give Israel, get this is a fact, you can verify it easily, it's 7,000 times more per capita than the foreign aid that we give the world at large. And Israel brags about its booming economy and its brilliant scientists and blah, 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 and how well they're doing. And yet they're taking this kind of welfare from us. And you just heard everybody express the idea that we're not particularly wealthy ourselves. Israel keeps doing this. And that's just pocket change compared to the wars that Israel has sucked us into. That's coming to trillions of dollars. And that's not even counting the suffering both here and abroad. So I ask people to look this up. Bolin, BOLLYN.com. Don't take my word for it. Look it up.
Thank you. Next speaker, gentleman in the blue will be our last speaker for oral communications. Please go ahead.
And that last speaker was Pat Kittle, who I've had him in my program years ago. He's always been a critic of homeless folks who are bad campers, and in fact he kind of extends that to all homeless advocates who don't include in their discussion a critique of homeless bad campers, because he's concerned kind of a combination of immigration, population growth, and environmental concerns, as well as, of course, a concern that I share with him about Israeli aggression in the Middle East. I don't know about the 9/11 thing. I've got to be honest, I've never researched it as fully as I could or come to a decision on it, and it's also a controversial issue that it makes me nervous to take a stand on, but also I don't really feel I have enough information. But I often cut him out of this show and when I play oral communication, because his hostility toward Israeli government foreign policy, which is similar to my own, kind of has an anti-Semitic quality to it at times, or feels that it does. And so I always try to distinguish between anti-Israeli government and anti-Semitic commentary. I think one is one thing and one is another. But anyway, here's more oral communication with that little proviso. Let's get back to it.
I emailed you before. Can I have four?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm representing Stepping Up Santa Cruz, and we did a new resource, homeless resource directory. You can find it on the website or on the Facebook page. You might want it, and we're going to... There's a new homeless resource directory on the Stepping Up Santa Cruz website, and I'll update it too. See any corrections, please let me know. I have some information, some questions, and then some proposals, and I'll talk fast because I don't know what 4 minutes is. Sorry. During the city manager presentation, on page 5, it said that when you guys voted, you voted for the River Street camp extending in absence of another HAP winter shelter option. I don't think that's what you voted for. I think you just voted to extend it. So maybe I missed that. I think you're changing the vote now if you're voting to close it. So I would ask what specifically that vote was. Okay. In response to your question, when you asked, did the HAP General Board get to give feedback to the Executive Committee? City Manager said that the HAP General Board was at a meeting about priorities. We were. That was different. And Councilmember Norian was there, too. But we were never in any sort of meeting to give any feedback about winter shelter options. We were told afterwards, just to clarify that one. When in the newspaper it said the HAP Executive Committee decided to give money to the Homeless Services Center, and that's actually city money as part of that. Don't you guys have to vote on that? Does the city manager, can they allocate money? Because it totals like $68,000. So that's a question too. In the presentation with the closing the parks, the same as the first person who spoke, it seems like there's some connection between the closing the parks and the fence being put up around San Lorenzo Park at the same time that the River Street camp is closing. I would ask if that was part of the discussion, because in the presentation there was no connection to it. A few things about the HAP Executive Committee. There have been no RFPs put out for winter shelter programs. There's only been conversations with particular groups, and that's one of the reasons why there's really few options, because it's a very closed conversation. I would say if you want more people at the table, you should invite more people to the table. The HAP Executive Committee does not do any oversight of any programs in town. All the nonprofits and their outcomes, they don't have to answer to the HAP Executive Committee. It's just sort of assumed that they're going to follow HUD guidelines, but no one's actually checking. So as you're deciding about where to put your money, you should be allowed to see what the outcomes are of these programs. The HAP Executive Committee, I wouldn't know how many city managers and the housing coordinating, like Rainey Marr and Elisa, I don't know how many have to be in the room, whether they have to be unanimous, whether they have a quorum, whether they have a majority. None of that's open. But they're deciding to close the River Street camp, even though you voted to keep it open. So I propose keeping the River Street camp open, having the city manager go back to the HAP Executive Committee to try to figure out how you can do the funding, because you're really only talking about December. In January, we're getting like $10, $11 million. So putting it out to the nonprofits of, hey, who wants to apply for some funding to keep it, to use money, and then a nonprofit could do the River Street camp. Another thing that I propose is having more of a discussion with Salvation Army. They're open to using their Laurel Street site, too. There was issues with the neighbors, they're willing to do buses the same as they're willing to do buses to BFW.
Thank you. No. Thank you. All right, next speaker, please.
And I don't think any of that man's questions were answered. I invited him to come on the radio. He felt a little wary of doing that. I think because of his close association with that HAP group that he talked about. But a lot of the concerns he raised and the questions he raised sound very important to me. And, of course, we have, as a consequence, still silence on those issues.
Keith McHenry, Lecter Library. On Sunday, which was really the third weekend of the month, we had over 209 people come to eat. Many were new faces, who are people who are recently displaced. Sadly, many are reporting that landlords are raising their rents dramatically in violation of the rent freeze, but since there's no rent board to stop it, they go willy-nilly forcing people to the streets, including families with children. So next week should be way over 200 on both days, if there's any, if history's any indication. At the same time, shutting down the River Street campground and fencing off Lorenzo Park and chasing homeless people out of San Lorenzo Park and telling them they're not allowed to be around there and telling them they have to go across the river and then putting a new fence around the post office and shutting down Grant Street Park. It has the impression to most of the people living on the streets that there's a war by this organization, by the city manager's office, by city council, by Parks and Rec, against people that are poor. So the, as a result of the policies here, we know more people will die this year on the streets as a direct result of the actions of the city of Santa Cruz. So I'd like to have a couple of minutes of silence here for those who are likely to perish as a result of these policies. And people are certainly invited to come to the memorial services that will be held on Tuesdays out in front. Thank you very much.
Next speaker, please.
Good evening, City Council. As time goes on and I see my tax dollars in action, I cannot seem to shake off that small yet growing feeling of buyer's remorse. We live in a town where rents are similar to that of New York City. I suppose you could say our traffic could be at the same level, but how about on the public transportation service level forefront? With most metro bus routes departing as often as once per hour, we are on the exact same level as Apple Valley, California, a desert rural town of Southern California. Why is our cost of living so high and our transportation so poor? Mission Street is dangerous for pedestrians and bikers, yet we only see Route 3 servicing that corridor once every 2 hours. Metro CEO Mr. Clifford was already given a raise after services were cut by 19%. That's just wrong. I challenge everyone to do 19% less work at their job and have the audacity to ask their boss for a raise. I imagine pink slips in their future, but not, of course, for a municipality worker. On top of this, I feel baited by the library measure going toward a parking garage. All of this goes to show my tax dollars are being put to poor use. I will keep this all of this in mind next time you beg for more money at the ballot. Now all I see these fences going up left and right while the city just got $3.3 million in grants to tackle the issue of homelessness. Thanks for blocking the garbage bins behind the fences and enabling litter bugs at San Lorenzo Park, by the way. If you can't manage your own parks and transportation with what you have already, this is how you can lose support for these items. Because somehow you were able to do it before and now you can't. What's with it? And I've said it before and I said it again, quit with the moseying. I understand that we've got a sitting duck here and there, but enough is enough with deferring the issues that matter to our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Phil Posner, I'm here speaking on behalf of myself and also my son, Micah, who wanted to be here. Martin Bernal, a second ago, Serge was up here at this microphone, and he made some good suggestions. You looked like you weren't listening. Now, maybe you were, and I'm wrong. But I want to talk to the city council about your feelings. You think it's easy for a 79-year-old man to sleep in a sleeping bag in front of City Hall? We did it because we think there's a lot of people out there, and you've been hearing them, like that lady who was ignored by seven people, who are being ignored. You have power. I assume that you sleep well at night. You know, I think what hurts me the most is I wrote a letter to every one of you, and only Chris answered me. I spent 39 days in a penitentiary in Mississippi. And you know what? They listened to us. And they talked to us. We didn't always like what they said, but at least they communicated with us. We've asked you to have some feelings about the suffering of homeless people. No bathrooms open at night, insufficient bathrooms, now a campground closed. Are you listening? Do you care? Do you sleep at night? Will you please at least communicate with us and tell us what you feel about this issue? Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. You're our last speaker on this side on oral communications.
Hi. I was downtown when the morning when Manuel Reyes vandalized a fountain, a drinking fountain in front of Starbucks, and I think it, you know, I was thinking about saying, like, it'd be nice if I could urge you guys to rebuild the fountain. But, you know, in some ways, I think it's kind of an example of where we've got homeless people who feel very disenfranchised. And he's a long-term homeless guy downtown. He's, on one hand, personable, and on the other hand, you know, just kind of like emotionally unstable and weird. And, you know, a lot of that goes on in the homeless community. You've got all kinds of problems that are comorbid with homelessness, drug abuse. I want to say that, you guys are worried about the wholesale tax on cannabis, but, I'm more worried about the people who are on the streets who are using drugs and don't have a place to go. What I'd like to see with homelessness in this community is kind of what Serge is on the tail of, which is just finding solid solutions for people, because there are a lot of people out there who have very limited options as time wears on. It seems like every year. They just raised the rent on me. And Measure M, whether it passes or not. These issues of people being on the streets and being marginalized are going to be with us for, you know, who knows how long. The economy's been pretty good. Unemployment's very low. But the stock market's doing something strange. But, you know, in the long run, we look at our community values and we look at, what do we feel, you know, is morally right to do about these issues. And the bathroom thing, coming back to the bathroom thing, I mean, I hope you guys can see fit to have Loudon Nilsen. Sorry, I'm out of time. Loudon Nilsen.
Thank you.
Bathrooms.
Thank you.
And that also concludes this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. If you have thoughts or comments, want to be on the show, have some information for Free Radio Santa Cruz, or you want to be a Free Radio broadcaster, give me a call, 831-423-4833, 421-4833. Back again on Sunday at 9:30.